This is Digital Story Podcast number 582, May 2nd, 2017. Today's theme is 5 Trail Tips for Day Hikers. I'm Derek Story. Spring is in the air, and the allure of the great outdoors calls to our spirit of adventure. What a pleasant thought after a long winter. Bubbling mountain springs, picnics beneath a shady tree, and expansive vistas to ponder and photograph. But Mother Nature isn't just flowery meadows and puffy clouds. So a little preparation goes a long ways towards a safe and satisfying adventure. And that's the subject in the first story of today's TDS podcast. I've been strapping on a day pack since I was in grammar school, actually. I completed my first 50-mile hike when I was 11 years old, and by the time I was 17, I had earned the rank of Eagle Scout and was spending my summers as a counselor and a guide for camp in the Sierras. That was a very cool job, by the way. Of course, also the days when one doesn't need a lot of money either, right? So, you know, these days I hike with my boys, mostly, and my camera. I'm not as fast up the mountain as I once was, but I still enjoy the outdoor life. And a big part of that comes from being prepared and staying nimble. So in that spirit, I have 5 tips for you. Now, they're not the standard everyday tips that you would probably hear about day hiking and outdoor life. But these are good tips, and I find myself sharing these a lot, both before adventures and sometimes even during adventures. So we'll see what you think of them. Let's jump right in. And the first one, learn the good plants from the bad ones. And, you know, this is one that I do constantly talk about on the trail, and it's amazing how many people really don't know the good plants from the bad plants in the area that they're hiking. Now, you can do a little research beforehand or go with someone that knows the area, and if they know the area, ask them. But what I'm talking about are, first of all, the plants that can get you in trouble. For instance, I'm in California, so we have a lot of poison oak and a lot of stinging nettle, and both of them are bad news. And poison oak in particular, now other places in the U.S. there's poison ivy, which I believe is similar in nature. But essentially what happens is you have contact with it, with the oils of the plant, and you might not get a reaction right away, but later on a reaction could manifest. And some people, the first time that they're around it, or the first time they have contact with it, they get a reaction. And then other people, it takes 2 or 3 times, but then once they get it, then it seems like it's easier thereafter. So you really have to be on the lookout for this stuff. And it is tough. Depending on your body chemistry and skin type and so forth, you'll get red areas for sure. Sometimes you'll get welts. They will last much longer than you think they should. And sometimes they will even travel. You think it's starting to go away, and then it pops up somewhere else on your arm or somewhere else. And it's really not good. And you can have a great hike and everything is wonderful, and then you have this for 2 weeks afterwards and it's not wonderful. The rule of thumb that we go by for poison oak is leaflets 3, let it be. It's so easy to remember and it's so true. And the way that poison oak shows up on the trail, and it's usually on the side of the trail, it'll be these vines or these little plants, or sometimes even big plants. Sometimes it crawls up trees, but the leaves are in groups of 3. And it's worth looking up before you go hiking. If you happen to be hiking in an area that has poison oak or poison ivy, just to see what they look like. And, you know, they're really tough. As I said, in the winter, actually, if they lose their leaves, sometimes they turn this real pretty red and then they'll fall off. But even the sticks can get you. And then, of course, all the different types of nettles, you really want to be aware of those. So you want to be aware of the bad plants and just stay away from them. Just don't have any contact at all. And then there are the good plants, and these can be a lot of fun. They can increase your enjoyment and appreciation of the area. And for example, I'll name two that we have in our area here. One is a bay tree, and the leaves from a bay tree actually can be a natural insect repellent, and they smell really good, and you tear them open and rub them on your arms and so forth, and it's pretty cool. And then the other is miner's lettuce, which will a lot of times, especially in shady areas, will be growing on the ground there. It's very low, and they have a little white flower. It's worth looking up, and it's actually quite tasty. It's very good, and it can be a nice afternoon snack. Just having a few bites of miner's lettuce is quite refreshing. So it's worth knowing both the good plants and the bad plants. The bad plants to avoid, the good plants to increase your appreciation of the area. And overall, you just feel more like you belong there. Next item, a little food and a lot of water. So when you're on a day hike, and especially in the spring and summer, where it tends to be warm, you don't need a lot of food during the hike. As you're doing the activity, most people anyway, don't get that hungry. While they're hiking. So all you really need is a few snack bars, protein bars, energy bars, whatever you happen to like, or even just a peanut butter and jelly sandwich will do it. Just a little something to have when you take your midday break. And now what will happen is, for most folks, is that they won't eat a lot while they're on the trail, but once they get back at the end of the day, then suddenly you're starving. And that's usually where we head off for Mexican food because that seems to be the best food in the world after a long day hike. But at any rate, while you're on the trail itself, you don't really need to carry a lot of food, just a little bit for a snack and to keep your blood sugar at a nice level. Now, what you do need is water, and at least a liter of water, and that's for each person. So if you're sharing water, then you're probably not carrying enough water. And I know sometimes couples will do that where the one person will carry the water and the other person can just scamper about. But you really do have to make sure that you have enough water and that you drink it over the course of the day so that you stay healthy. Water is the one thing that really is your fuel while you're hiking and will keep you feeling good. And you won't develop headaches as easily and all that kind of stuff. Now, drinking out of a stream, any stream, is a no-no. So you want to bring the water with you. You do not want to drink water that is there. There's all sorts of reasons for that, depending on the area that you're in. But, you know, there tend to be waterborne amoeba and so forth, and they can make you sick, and they can make you sick for a long time. So you want to stay away. That bubbling stream can look so beautiful and fresh and crisp and clean and inviting. And it probably is, and all those reasons, just don't drink it. Just don't drink that water. So a little food, which is really the mistake that I've seen some people make. They bring too much food. Just a little food and a lot of water. That's all you need on your day hike. Protective clothing works on many fronts. And this is something that is really an innovation over the last few years. High-tech fabrics are fantastic. I mean, they really are amazing. And for me, they have changed outdoor life a lot, not only for my hiking and backpacking, but also for my biking. And the thing about these fabrics is that you can wear a shirt that's a long-sleeve shirt that has a collar. You may or may not want a collar. I like a collar because it helps protect my neck also. And with this fabric, you get sun protection up to SPF 50. So it's like having sunblock, but you don't have to have the goop on your arms and on your shoulders. You get protection from insects, which in the spring is more of an issue, generally speaking, than in the summer. More insects tend to be out in the springtime. However, just having those areas where you don't have to put any repellent or anything on you, you just have this nice shirt, this long sleeve shirt that's protecting you from the sun, it's protecting you from insects, It's also protecting you from brushing up against plants that maybe you don't want to be brushing up against, scraping your arm on a rock or something. The fabric takes a hit and not your skin. There are just so many cool things about these high-tech outdoor apparel. And then the thing about them is that they tend to wick away moisture, which is really nice. And you go, well, I don't want to be wearing long sleeve shirt on a warm spring or summer day. It's amazing how comfortable they are, and because of the fabric. And so you're protecting your skin in so many ways. They're comfortable. And then when you're in the shade, they're also comfortable. They're really, really quite amazing. And I just feel like that my body temperature stays more even when I'm wearing these fabrics. And I definitely feel a lot more protected from the environment, from the sun, and so forth. So if you haven't looked into the latest in outdoor clothing and activewear, as they call it, it's really worth revisiting, because I think some of this stuff is really nice. I work with REI and Eddie Bauer. Those are two areas where I shop. And part of the reason why I like both of them is because they have tall sizes, and Eddie Bauer is really great about tall sizes. So I can get stuff that fits well, it protects my skin, it looks good, really worth considering. And it's much better, I gotta tell you, it's much better than just wearing an old t-shirt out on the trail. You go, well, you know, I'm gonna be out and I'm gonna be getting sweaty and everything, I'll just wear an old t-shirt. You're really not getting the protection that you deserve with an old t-shirt. It's worth spending just a little bit for a really nice shirt, some nice pants, some good socks, all that stuff. You'll be so much more comfortable over the long haul out on the trail. Trail shoes over sneakers. It's so tempting just to put on your Nikes and head out. And, you know, I've done it for short hikes. I have. But I tell you, trail shoes are a lot better. And just as I was talking about how outdoor apparel has improved over the years, so have trail shoes. Trail shoes these days are very light, and they're super comfortable, and they feel great. And what I'm really looking for, I mean, the first thing I'm looking for is a good sole. In other words, I want a shoe that is going to help me not slip when I'm on rocky surfaces, especially rocky surfaces that have some loose rock too, because I don't want to slip going up or going down. So a good sole that really grabs the terrain, I like a lot. I also like something that is going to take care of my feet over the course of a day, especially when I'm stepping on rocks, when I'm stepping on pointed things, all that kind of stuff. And then also take care of my ankles, give me a little bit of support so that if I do happen to slightly, you know, turn an ankle funny, if I step on the side of a rock or something, that it will help me not have a sprain, okay? You know, and then there's all the other wonderful things that you get from proper trail shoes that fit really well. Now, the added bonus, in addition to all the good things that I just talked about, is that sooner or later, especially in the spring, you're going to step in mud. It's just the way it is. Even if you're doing a stream crossing and you make it successfully across the stream, you do your little dance across the log there. When you step off on the other side, a lot of times you'll step on wet ground that looks firm and it'll be squishy, and then you get, you know, some mud on your shoes. And you don't want to have your everyday sneakers covered in mud when you get home from the hike. So having outdoor shoes that when you get home, then you let them dry out, you knock the mud off, you brush them off a bit, and they're ready to go on the next hike. They make such a big difference. And I'll tell you, if you have good trail shoes, and if you have some of this outdoor apparel that I'm talking about, and you work in layers and, you know, all the other stuff that you probably already know, your experience will be noticeably different and better as a result of just these two things. And finally, number five, extra weight is your enemy on the trail. And I mean this in a couple ways. You know, one of the things that I try to do before hiking season starts is lose a couple pounds, just lose a little bit of weight. It's funny, if I lose 5 pounds, I really notice it when I'm climbing up the side of that mountain, when the trail gets really steep. And I want to get up there because I want that payoff. I want that view. And 5 pounds less makes a big difference when you're out day hiking. It really does. A disproportionate difference in my mind than if I don't shed it and I head out there anyway. Now, of course, part of it also is that the first couple day hikes of the year, you're not in hiking shape yet either. And, you know, so that's part of it. But not in hiking shape usually means, at least in my case, that I'm carrying a little too much weight. So at any rate, shedding a few pounds before hiking season or at the first part of hiking season really pays off. Now, the second part of this is not carrying too much weight, not carrying a whole lot on you. All you really need for most day hikes is your water, your snack, whatever that happens to be. We talked about that earlier. The 10 essentials, and you know, those come from my Boy Scout days. And I don't always necessarily have all 10 when I'm out on the trail, but they're things like sunglasses, sunblock, hat, knife, flashlight, you know, those sort of things. And of course, all that stuff has gotten much lighter than it used to be. So the 10 essentials, whatever you feel like you need to be safe on the trail, a small first aid kit is usually in there. And again, my first aid kit is just a little pouch. It just looks like a little plastic envelope, but it really has a lot of things in there that come in handy if you need a little help while you're out on the trail. And then your camera. And when you bring your camera, and I did a post about this today, actually, Monday, you don't need to bring your whole DSLR kit for Pete's sake. Don't do that. My hiking camera on the last hike that I went on was the Pen F with the 14 to 42 millimeter pancake zoom, and that's all I brought. I knew I was going to be in daylight the whole time. I didn't even need to bring a fast prime or anything like that. And I kept it around my neck most of the time, and it was great. It was fantastic. A little TG4, you know, one of the all-weather cameras, is fantastic for day hiking. I mean, unless you're going on a once-in-a-lifetime trip somewhere, then you may want to bring a little bit more gear. But really what I'm talking about is the sort of day hiking where you get out, hopefully, a number of times over the course of the spring and summer. You want to get some outdoor pictures. You want to add, you know, a new dimension to your library. You've been cooped up all winter. You want to get some fresh air. You want to get in shape a little bit. You know, all that kind of stuff that comes from outdoor hiking. For those kind of hikes, you don't need a lot of gear. And I'll tell you, the compact gear that I have these days is so good. The images are great. I'm shooting RAW files with the Pen F. I'm shooting RAW files with the TG4. I have great highlight and shadow recovery. I can blow these things up. I mean, it is terrific. So resist bringing too much gear on the hike. Just all you need is a camera and then your favorite zoom lens, your water, and a few other goodies. And then just get out there. Travel light, be nimble, have nice clothing, learn a little bit about the area that you're going to be hiking in. Go with someone else. I think I don't always follow that advice. I admit sometimes I go alone. But generally speaking, if you can, go with somebody else. I think it's more fun that way, and it's a little bit safer. And get out there and get some different shots. Have some fun. This is the time of year to do that. We have these weekends coming up that is going to be great weather. Go out and soak some up. Enjoy life a little bit and commune with nature. A great deal on the Panasonic Lumix GM5. And this is a nice segue from our last topic. This little GM5 is so compact. It is a terrific mirrorless camera. It's an interchangeable lens mirrorless camera made by Panasonic. And I have one that I'm selling. And the reason why I'm selling it, it's not because I don't love it, because I do, but because I have the Pen F now, and I really try to just keep a camera in each category because, well, otherwise I would end up with so many cameras. And this is interesting. I don't know what's going on here, but normally I sell my used gear on Amazon Marketplace, and I have really good success there. I've, you know, sold all my Canon gear there, and I've sold Olympus gear there over the years and all that. And I have a nice little shop there, and it, you know, it's highly rated and all that good stuff. But for some reason, I don't know if something's going on between Panasonic and Amazon, but Amazon won't let me list my GM5 on the marketplace, even though they have them for sale on Amazon. And they're for sale for like $8.99 on Amazon. I think the cheapest one I could find on Amazon was $6.49. The one that I'm selling is $399, and it is in pristine shape. But anyway, so I was going, okay, that's interesting. You won't let me list this on Amazon. So I went ahead and I put it in the Nimble store, and it's for sale there for $399. And you get the GM5 with the nice red leather. It's really attractive. It looks great on that satin black finish. The 12 to 32 millimeter Panasonic zoom, and that has image stabilization built into it. It also has a brand new neck strap. It hasn't been taken out of the plastic bag even. Has a fresh battery, has the charger, has all the documentation, has the owner's manual, and it's all in the original box. I mean, this is a terrific kit. Great for outdoor stuff this coming year. It has both the LCD screen and an electronic viewfinder in this small little camera. So I like it for outdoor stuff also, because when you're trying to shoot with just an LCD screen in bright sunlight, it can be very difficult. This has the electronic viewfinder also. It captures movies. This is a neat camera. So anyway, if you're interested in this kit, I have the link in the show notes, or you can just go to thenimblephotographer.com and click on shop in the nav bar, and you'll see the camera listed there. There's only one of them, so when it sells, it's gone and it'll go away. But if you're looking for a nice Micro Four Thirds camera that's super compact, would be great for these outdoor activities like I'm talking about. Accepts the full line of Olympus and Panasonic Micro Four Thirds lenses at a very good price. Go take a look at it, and if you like it, buy it. Photojournalists reveal their favorite publications to work with and what they pay. And this is a cool report that I saw on DP Review, and I'm just going to read it to you, and then we'll talk a bit about it. Columbia Journalism Review recently surveyed a group of photojournalists on their favorite publications to work with based on several criteria, including arguably the biggest one, pay. As a result, they've published an article revealing the day rates for some of the top publications, as well as some insight into other factors, such as balancing a lower day rate with exposure to a wider audience. So by the numbers, how did the publications stack up for freelance photographers? CNN comes out on top with the best day rate of $650, though National Geographic is close behind with typical rates between $500 and $650. Harper's Magazine rate was hard to pin down, but reported rates varied from $500 up to $1,000 per day. The New York Times recently boosted its rate to $450 per day, making it competitive with the top-paying outlets. But CJR notes that the photographers they spoke with acknowledged that the Times' wider reach and top-notch editorial staff goes a way to compensate for the lower pay. Coming in with the lowest day rate of the bunch is the Washington Post, offering $350. So this is kind of cool. I really liked that they put together this report, because if you're not out there working, you don't really know. You don't really know. And some photographers will talk about how much they get paid and some don't, or you might not even know anyone that's shooting for the Washington Post or the New York Times. So the fact that the Columbia Journalism Review came out with this report, I think, is very helpful to a lot of photographers. And one of the things that you look at, let's say that $500 a day is a good day rate for a top-notch publication, then that helps you gauge when you're thinking about what to charge for the jobs that you do. And let's say that you're working for a regional publication or even a local publication. Well, then you can set your sights accordingly and be within a reasonable range, both for the market and, you know, something that works for you. Now, of course, the other thing that jumps out here is nobody's going to get rich being a photojournalist in this market, because even at the top rate of $650 a day, you're probably not working every day. You probably get a few days a week if you're really rolling along and you have an editor that likes you. So, I mean, you have equipment, you have travel, you have all sorts of other stuff. So this is not a gravy train by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it's cool knowing. And I really appreciate Columbia Journalism Review for putting out this report so that we can all sort of better gauge what we should expect, what we should charge when we're doing freelance journalism out in the market. The final schedule set for the Northern California Coast Tour. So this is a workshop that I have coming up May 18 through 20, 2017. And I've been working on the schedule for a bit, and I finally have the schedule. And after I finished it, and you know, I sent it to the people that are signed up for the workshop already. By the way, we do have one seat open. But when I sent it to the folks that had signed up, I was going, that is a cool trip. And I just want to read you a short list of the places that we're going to visit on this Northern California Coast Tour, this photography workshop that we're going to do starting May 18th. Armstrong Woods, which is a beautiful redwood grove. Goat Rock, which is at the beach. Fort Ross State Park. Stillwater Cove Regional Park. Cruz Rhododendron State Natural Reserve, Salt Point, and then, of course, Ocean Cove, and we're staying in Ocean Cove Lodge. We are going to be at all of these locations and then locations in between because it is a road trip, right? We take off, and even though we may be headed to Fort Ross from Jenner, let's say, or from Goat Rock in this case, even though we're headed to Fort Ross, well, if we see something fantastic along the way, I mean, we are driving along the coast, then we're going to stop at those places too. So I'm really excited about this. The weather is looking great for May. The rhododendrons should be really phenomenal. The whole thing is just really fascinating to me. If you're interested in filling that last seat, all you have to do is go to the registration page. I have the link that goes directly to the registration page in the show notes. Just click on it and take you right over there. Like I said, we have one seat left. And for those of you that have already signed up and joining us, I cannot wait to see all of you and take off on this adventure. We are going to have a blast. Just a few updates here. I want to mention that if you're going to do a little shopping at B&H or Amazon, that we have advertising tiles on all the pages of the digital story. All you have to do is go to those tiles, click on them. It'll take you over to the site, and then you can just navigate to where you want to go. By doing so, helps support this site through their respective affiliate programs. And speaking of helping out the site, I just want to mention that our Patreon members are amazing. I so appreciate the continued support. I'm a Patreon supporter also. I also support a podcast. And so first of the month, and so all of our pledges went through, and I just got the notice from Patreon. Just thank you for supporting the digital story and all the other work that we do. You really do help keep the lights on here. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper, makers of what I think is the best of value in inkjet printing going right now. I'm knee deep in my creative printing ebook, and well, you never guess what kind of paper I'm using there. But Red River Paper is also helping me create that book. And of course, this is going to be the ebook that we distribute at Out of Chicago for everyone that takes my printing class there. And speaking of Out of Chicago, I just want to mention that if you want to go to a really good and affordable conference with photographers that love shooting and that will get you out into Chicago taking pictures and hanging out with other photographers, you really should take a look at the Out of Chicago conference that's coming up in June. I'm speaking there on behalf of Red River Paper, and there are a ton of other great photographers, speakers, many, many, many names that you'll recognize. I love working with Red River Paper on this project, and I love working with them on the ebook project. And the ebook will be announced probably at the Out of Chicago conference. It'll be free to the folks that are attending my talks there, as I mentioned earlier, but it'll also be available to everyone else too. Red River Paper, they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story, and they are the longest running supporter of our site. All right. Well, that is going to do it for me today. I can't wait to get back outdoors. I've already had 2 hikes this season, and I'm looking forward to another one really soon. It's just wonderful. I just feel so good, and I really do feel like I get in a different kind of shape when I go out hiking. One thing that I tell people all the time is that biking shape is not hiking shape. You use completely different stuff while you're hiking. I hope my tips are helpful to you, and I hope you get to enjoy the great outdoors this spring and summer also. All right, until next week, have a great week, breathe some fresh air, and I'll see you for next week's show. Until then, bye-bye now.